This call is being recorded.
And then I'll leave this up there so you can see my lovely face. And let me just kind of explain a little bit about what we've been doing with this interview. We have a series on our blog called Something Significant. I think you're going to be about the 20 or 21st or something like that interview that we've done. And the idea is to give a voice to ordinary people that are doing extraordinary things. And we've interviewed some really amazing people, like the CEO of Make-A-Wish, a woman who was a Dutch woman who left Holland to go down to Zimbabwe and start a farm and ended up building a school because the local kids didn't have any schooling. And the school has grown to about 800 kids over the last 30 years, and she's still there. A guy who started Stop Soldier Suicide, a fourth degree black belt Taekwondo master, just all kinds of really, really cool people. And so that's the idea. We have just a series of questions that I'll ask, and I haven't really done a two-person interview before, I don't think, but we'll just, Herman and Jason, both of you to share in answering the questions, if you will. And to set the stage, I define for purposes of my life and also for happy living in this interview, I define significance as doing something that you love and something that is valuable to others. So when we talk about, significance, if you can think of it in those terms, that'd be wonderful. So the first question, any questions before we start?
No, Matt, I think we're ready to go.
Okay. The first question is, tell us a little about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Me go first. All right. My name is Jason Cox, and I have gotten to where I am by a series of happenstances. I was working in my hometown, having my own companies. And I had MS and multiple sclerosis. Believe it or not, I took my vision in my right eye in September of 2001. And then I decided I was going to go back to school because I figured that no matter whatever happened with my MS, I could always be able to think. It took my walking ability or anything else. So I applied and was accepted at the University of Notre Dame. I got my MBA in Notre Dame, then I continued my academic exploration and went to the University of Southern California and got my Master of Real Estate, and then I had friends in North Carolina, and so I moved to North Carolina, where I met my wife in 2007, and then, happenstancely, in 2009, Herman Stone and I met at the David H. Murdoch Institute. I have worked with my family foundation since 1996, and we have always promoted research and thought about diseases that impact the Cox family. So, when I was introduced to what David H. Murdoch was doing here, we were giving money to National MS Society, the Foundation of Neurological Sciences, but I was impressed what they were doing here because this was true, pure research and thought. There was no extraneous expenses, and it's been done by a exemplary university, Duke University. So I got involved with Herman, and we have worked together to create and get a 501c3 under David H. Murdoch to be able to further their research and cause here, to come up with a cure for the disease that I have lived with for 22 years, multiple sclerosis. That's my motivation. That's how I got to be here.
I got to be here. I had read about this incredible facility being built in Canapolis, and had just recently, before that, learned that my youngest son had contracted MS. as well as my oldest child, my daughter. Both of them were in their early 30s. I wanted to make a difference. I came and asked Mr. Murdoch if I could have a meeting with him. And we were able to set that meeting up. And I told him that I'd like to see us study. I have an MS research facility at the North Carolina Research Campus that he was building. And he inquired as what contribution would I make to it, and I told him I had just recently sold my business, and then if he granted me that wish to start this MS research facility, I'd give him $1 million, in which he quickly took out his hand, shook my hand, looked me straight in the eye, and he said, "Mr. Stone, we will start an MS research facility at the campus." That is my honor. That's my pledge to you. And with that, I struck him $1 million check. And so that's why I'm here today.
Herman, what year was that?
I think it was 2008. 2008.
That's great. What a story.
Well, my dad always told me, son, it's better to be lucky than smart. And as I've told a lot of people, I feel that I have been blessed with being lucky. And lots of good things have happened to Herman. And I like to give back to the communities I serve. And I still do that with the theaters I operate today.
That's awesome.
I do a lot of programs for needy children and programs like that can't afford to go to the movies. We try to make it so that they can't afford to go to the movies and they get that experience.
That's great. And on a side note, I really appreciate your support for our little Make-A-Wish cause. That was very, very meaningful to me. Okay, that's great. Good start. Question number two, how has significance played a role in your journey?
Significance, you mean how has our...
Yeah, so doing what you love and giving back to others,
how has that impacted your
journey?
I would say my best thought on this is that my motivating force in life is to always be of help to others. And by doing this, it provides me the ability to help other people on a cause that I understand and I have a personal vested interest in pushing it forward to help others. How does this help my significance, you know, the drive in my life? It provides me the ability to use my gifts, the things that God endowed me with, which is my ability to basically talk to anyone. And he gave me this disease, not because he was punishing me, but because he knew I would be a good advocate. So for me in my life, this does give us a way to provide what this research and this cause needs. It's providing me as an outlet, as a voice for this cause.
That's awesome.
I think if when you've been given or you've been blessed with having good fortune, I think the greatest thing that you can do for yourself would be your fellow man is to really give back to the community. And that's something I've done in theater business, and I've been very fortunate to be a part of a great industry that I love with all my heart. But it puts me in touch with the communities that I serve. on a daily basis. And you can't take it with you.
No, that's so right.
Better to give back and share, okay? And it's a lot more fun to give than to receive. When you get to a certain age, I'd much rather give than receive, you know?
Excellent. So the next question is kind of like, when was that moment? Was there a moment or a situation when you became aware of, the question is, those things that are most significant to you? But another way of thinking about it is, when your life really got clarity that this is the mission that you're going to go on?
Well, for me, it was, it was a shock when my daughter came to me and told me that she had MS. It was a tremendous blow to me. I guess you'd call it a wake-up call. And then what was it, Justin? 8, 9 years later? Eight years.
It's about 5 years.
5 years later. Then Justin was having some problems, and then he was diagnosed. And, you know, I think when hardship touches your life, it puts life in another whole perspective. And it certainly did for me.
Yeah.
And that's when I really knew that I needed to change some things I was doing in my life and see if I could do some other things for that could make a difference. Having two children with MS is very rare. And that was my wake-up call.
Yeah. Excellent. How about you, Jason?
For me, Matt, mine would end up, I'll have to say, was September of 01. I was driving on Interstate 94 or 90 to South Bend, driving into the sun. And I was like, something's not right. And you're kind of looking at the abyss, because when you have these that I have, you don't know what the future's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been stubborn, just so you know. So at that point, I just said, you know what? I am not letting this stop me. I'm going to keep moving forward. There's going to be a resolution. And I will do everything in my power and might to fight this disease. Period. Over that period of time, I was working on my family foundation. My parents were very, very blessed financially and in success, and exceptional people. So it gave me an outlet to basically work on that cause. I wanted to find an answer for this disease. So how about my moment that I wanted to have significance? It was the day that I decided that enough's enough. It's not going to kill you. You're going to move forward, and you're going to keep moving. And that was my day. November 2001.
That's great.
So that was.
Matt, let me digress just a second and go back. I received a call years ago from my good friend Tom Sherrick, and he was president of 20th Century Fox. And he called me up, and he was crying. And he said, "Herman, I need your help." And I said, well, sure, Tom, how can I help you? And he said, my daughter, Melissa, had been diagnosed with MS.
Mm.
Now, this was 6, 7 years before my daughter was diagnosed.
Mm.
And he said, I'm going to put on we're going to put on a function out here on the Avenue of the Stars in Hollywood. And I need you to buy a table for me. And the table will be $10,000. And I had the number of screens that I could do that. I said, sure. So I bought the table. I bought a table for the next 15 years, every year. It allowed Mr. Sherrick, or I call Tom, to start an MS research facility at UCLA. And then I went out to a couple of them. But here again, I know with you that I'd get a call from my daughter.
Right.
And she has. So we lost Tom year before last. He had prostate cancer. But all the great work that this gentleman has done, as UCLA has, they've made a lot of good strides with MSC. So, you know, you just never know what life's going to bring you.
Right.
The cards you're going to get dealt. I miss Tom tremendously. But I'm so thankful for all the great work and the startup of UCLA MS Research Facility. We still put on the banquet today, every year. It raises a lot of money. All the film companies come in behind it. That's one thing that I'm so proud to be a part of my industry. The film companies, through the years, Make-A-Wish, you name it, they're there.
Yeah.
They give back. My industry is a great industry. It's now gone international, gone worldwide. When I came into business in 1965, it was USA and Canada. Bollywood came in about 20, 25 years ago, the Indian films. But now you see movie theaters been built across the whole world. Across the whole world. It's a great search engine. It hires millions and millions of people. They're building theaters now in China, Russia, all the foreign markets. And they're making movies, and a good movie can be dubbed into 117 languages. Think about how many people make their living with their voices. It's a great source, and we need to protect it and make sure that it stays good and viable, because it's great for America. But we're going to have competition now because the Russians are starting to make movies. They're going to dub theirs over to English and everything else. Chinese, they're going to be making, they're making movies. It's a great industry. Unfortunately, our present governor has about destroyed our movie business in North Carolina. It's all gone to South Carolina and to Georgia. One time we had a lot of production being made in this state. We have over 2,400 young people that study film production in North Carolina. We have 17 colleges or community colleges. I was on the North Carolina Film Council for 14 years. I've served two governors. I served under Mike Easley as well as Beverly Perdue. Unfortunately, when the present mayor, governor got elected, he did away with our film council. We have no film council anymore. He never, I went to him and I said, do you understand that we're teaching in 19 schools? He said, I did not know that. And so I told the governor, I said, you know, you sure did do your homework very well, did you? It's a sad, sad fact of life. I can't wait to vote against him. I like to get back. We got a lot of young people that are studying film production, and they get through these courses in our colleges, and they have to go to South Carolina or to other states to get employment. There's is low that a lot of people don't realize. All right, I'll get off the soap opera.
It was very interesting. Maybe I'll have to write a second post. So the next question, so you both just kind of shared when that moment happened and your life got clear and this was a mission you were on to fight MS. What obstacles have you faced during that journey on that fight, and how have you overcome them?
What we're working on right now is 501. The obstacle, when I found out that Silent Gregory was spending as much time as he was drawing up grants, and that's when my friend and I decided that we need to go a different way. We need to raise money, put money in his hands and in this campus over here, and keep them researching all the time. Not sitting around drawing up grants, which I had no idea it was as time-consuming as it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest obstacle that I think, and I think you agree with.
Yeah, and it was. We had to address. That was the item, because Herman proved with his initial donation that, and we call that exploratory funds. Was funds that was not constricted to being on a grant, which means if you have a grant, which takes a lot of time to write, you have to work just within that grant guidelines. There is basically a box you have to work with. Whereas when Herman gave the money, there was no restriction to it. It was, you can explore, you have a thought, go after it.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that Simon, Sabrina, and their team over here with Duke, they're smart people. If they're given the assets and the capabilities, which is money, to be able to think and go outside the box, they'll come up with good items. They'll come up with inventions. They came up with a mouse that replicates MS.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to think outside the box, go where other people can't, and at the end of all that, they come up with new items. They've done all the research, they can then write a grant to go prove it. So someone can put them in a box once they have the idea, ferret it out. But this gives them what's called exploratory funds to go and look at what is out there and what the research team is thinking could be a potential. So that's what Herman and I are working on by approaching foundations, high net worth people, and we're trying to generate $1 million a year. That is our goal, for them to be able to have those exploratory funds to put into the exploratory research that needs to happen.
I hope that we exceed $1 million.
Me too.
I didn't hear that, Herman.
My goal is to exceed $1 million a year.
Yeah, okay.
I think this campus, I think what they're doing, Sprint and Simon, it deserves folks and foundations getting behind it.
Yeah.
I truly believe that this campus and this program here can make a big difference. And it deserves foundation support. So Jason and I are going to be very aggressive in going after these groups.
Mm.
Yeah, see, the reason the 501c3 was important to us is that a foundation, a private foundation, a high net worth family cannot give to anybody without having that 501c3 designation to be able to write it out. That was important. David Murdoch was very gracious and allowed us to have a designated fund under his own 501c3, allowing us to avoid the expense of that, and brings up the biggest point of all, is that our research, the research for the MS department, over 90% of it's going to go strictly to the research. There's no extraneous raising money costs. There's no extraneous putting people up at a Ritz-Carlton in New York so they can be at a fundraiser. No, it's just us getting on the phone, calling our friends, calling people in our community, to which are just within 40 miles of Charlotte, we have almost $5 billion worth of private foundation. Mm-hmm. We can pick up the phone, call them, and I like Herman, expect that we should be able to generate more than $1 million a year with that.
If someone reads this,
overhead.
Go ahead, Herman.
I'm sorry. The overhead taken out of a lot of people's funds they give out of the graciousness of their hearts. And to see the overheads and see how some of this money is spent is quite, in my opinion, quite disgusting. Mm. And I'm so glad that Jason brought that up, because we want the majority of those good funds to go back over here and go to research.
Yeah.
And not to overhead and fancy lunches and stuff like that, okay? It's a good point. I'm glad you made that.
My private foundation, Matt, gave money to this because of that one reason, is that it fits our foundation's protocols. That is, we have less than 15% of the raise goes to research or goes to expenditures. So everything, 85% or more, is going to research. This is a 90% plus. So we were happy with that. And my Jay Cox Family Foundation is the first foundation giving money for giving in a donation. It's in the mail, by the way. And so that is, that's what caused us to get on board.
How do others make donations? If I'm going to put that in the article, how would somebody get in touch with you to donate money?
Jenny Alfaro, she runs the account for us. And Jenny, can you send Matt your mail address, email address? So Jenny Alfaro can take direct donations and provide the 501c3 status.
Okay.
For any foundation.
Yeah, just send me that information and I'll include it in what I write up here. Okay, so you talked about obstacles.
And wait, Matt, there's one other way.
Yes, sir.
We also have Sabrina and Simon have put together a website that we're going to launch on November 7th. Yeah. Will they be able to click on the website and donate directly to the research? It will be deposited directly into the account that you've already set up.
Okay, so if you hit that deadline, I think our post goes out a week or two after that. So that'd be great. We could include that in the post as well.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah,
okay, and if for some reason we go before that goes live, it's not a problem. We'll just go back and add it after the fact. So just as soon as it's ready to go, get it to me and we'll include it in our post.
Perfect.
Okay, so on the obstacle question, you both talked about obstacles to raising money, and I got that. That's great. But let's go a little bit more personal and talk about obstacles that you've faced, Jason, having the disease, and how you've overcome them. And Herman, the obstacles that you've faced as a father with two children facing this disease. So maybe you can both talk about that just for a second, how you've overcome those obstacles that life's thrown at you.
I really don't think that you overcome them. I live with this every day, that I'm awake. I think about it constantly. You pray, you hope that there'll be a cure, that there'll be a miracle. I haven't been able to overcome it. I try to live with it the best I can. I think that's the only way I know how to answer that question.
That's a great way to answer it.
Matt, how do I live with MS? I get up every day, I go forward. There's days you're like, you really don't want to. Days your legs aren't going to work. Nights you can't sleep. You don't swallow up. But you know what I do? I focus on a goal. I have a goal. Here's my goal. My goal is I want to walk my daughter down the aisle. That's my ultimate number one goal. I want to walk her. I don't want to be in a wheelchair. I want to walk my daughter down the aisle, which means I got to keep walking for at least another 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my goal. I have a goal. I focus on it every day. My goal is to take care of my family, raise my kids. And when that day comes and I walk her down the aisle, something happens after that, okay, fine. But that's my goal. It's in my head, and I will continue working every day to go forward. So how do I get through it? I have goals.
That's great. I'm glad I re-asked the question because I remember you telling me that story, and that is that's a great way to overcome things. All right, we're going to lighten things up a little bit here. The next question is, what is one thing you wish you knew 10 years ago?
I'm not sure we have enough time to play.
That just says one thing, but not all the things.
I know that. I'll take it. You want to go first?
We're going
to be here a long time.
Saying that if 10 years ago you had known how wonderful your life would be, you would have worried less or been less. Is that what you're
probably saying? Yeah.
Okay.
But I would have, you know, I would have worried a little bit less. That would be the easiest way of putting it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good one. All right, Herman. He gave you some cover time.
All right,
I'm not sure.
I gave you cloud cover, my friend.
Well, 10 years ago, that's about when I had sold out my business. So, it was all in perspective. I came off of a 9-year marathon before that, jumping airplanes. Crazy stuff, doing movie theaters all over the country. I was time to rest, but then all of a sudden, within about 2 or 3 weeks, I was right back in the theater business.
Herman can't sit still.
No, and I could tell right quick that my wife said, "When are you going to start another company?" That meant she wanted me out of the house. And I'm going to go to work. So I jumped right back into it and said, "Well, I'll go ahead and build this third chain, but I'm not going to sell this one. I'm going to leave it to my family." So that's what I was. I thought that I was going to be retired and live the life of luxury, but didn't quite work out. Only about 3 or 4 days, and I was right back in the movie theaters again.
All right, I'm gonna.
It keeps me out of trouble.
It keeps you out of trouble. We'll come back to that one maybe if you think of something. The next question is, what is one hope that you have for the next 10 years?
Oh, that's an easy question.
I think it is.
I hope and pray that we find a solution and a cure for MS that can give a lot of relief to a lot of folks. That's my everyday prayer and hope and wish that I have.
Yeah, that's an easy
one. Yeah, we're working hard. I'm encouraged when I see what we're doing here at the North Carolina campus, what UCLA is doing, what Northwest is doing. I mean, we've got three really good research facilities, right? Okay. So we're coming at MS in a lot of different directions, aren't we, Jason?
We are, definitely. And I hope that David Murdoch, he's set up here, is replicated on the West Coast somewhere. Because you get two things. You get an additional set of samples on the West Coast, and you have a second that I imagine is Silicon Valley adopter that you put one of these out there. You book the building, and you put it all in. And I sent Jenny the article this week. It is truly an astounding business model because all of a sudden you've changed it. So I hope in the next 10 years that David Murdoch's idea, his business model here, is replicated across the country.
Jason, let me ask about that. That replication, let's suppose that Herman's wish comes true and there's a cure for MS. And so therefore, let's just say it's a real deal, it's a cure, it's done. So then is the Murdoch facility and business model, does it move into another disease?
Trust me, there's always going to be diseases to study.
Yeah, okay.
And no matter where you are in the world, but I just think that given all the additional capital and money on the West Coast, and the ability that is on the West Coast and on the East Coast, we've got the East Coast covered, let's get the West Coast involved. And then you'd have two different silos going after diseases in A, the most cost-effective, and B, most collaborative environment that there is.
Okay, when you talk about the business model, it's primarily let the scientists be scientists and have a fundraising methodology outside of that organization so they can spend all their time researching. Am I oversimplifying
it? Basically, give them a facility, let these people pay rent, and included in their rent, give them the best equipment, give them all the specimens they could ever want to study, and then let the universities and the tenants supply the people and the brain power. That's the business model. Because every different institution here is studying something different, a different disease. Lou Gehrig's, diabetes, they're all studying their specifics.
So it's
all the specifics can use the same equipment to study.
I'd like to make a statement that I am eternally grateful and will always be for David Murdoch and for the contribution that he has made to North Carolina, to Duke, to a lot of the colleges here with this great facility. Because he truly has given North Carolina a tremendous asset in this research facility. And I'm eternally grateful for him. And he is a man of character. He's a man of word. And I think we all should recognize what David Murdoch has done for our state and for this whole community.
Excellent. Okay, last question. Are there any books or resources that you'd recommend? Favorite books? Or it could be favorite movies too, I suppose.
I'll do a favorite book. It's strange enough. I'll give you two books. One is The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari.
Yeah, read it. That's a great one.
A good book. And then the second one is The Art of War.
The Art of War.
The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
And Sun Tzu.
I'll go to movies. I'm not much of a reader. I've spent most of my time with architectural plans to go to movie theaters. I don't know. I have so many good movies. It's hard to say one particular one. I mean, the recently saw Sully. Thought that was wonderful. Recently saw Magnificent Seven. Thoroughly enjoyed that one. You know, I just love entertainment.
That reminds me. So you said you have a charitable fund that helps low-income people go see films, go to the theater?
Pat, there's even another book he really does recommend. Turning Inspiration into Action.
That's a great book. You know,
what was the question, Matt? So
I think you said earlier that you have a charitable foundation or effort that helps low-income people go to the theater.
Yeah, we have, we do a children's series every summer in all of our theaters, 6 to 8 weeks every summer, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, $1. We have school buses, we have kids that have never seen the light of the big screen because they can't feel like they can afford to go. We make it very affordable.
Is that something that people can... Is that something people can donate to, or that's something that you just do internally?
I do that internally.
Okay.
We had this summer in the 414 plexes that I now operate. Over 75,000 kids.
That's great. Is there some
giving back to you? And that's for $1. We have like popcorn for $1. We make it so affordable.
That's great.
And to go down front and look back up in the stadium and watch these kids' eyes when they first time they see Hollywood on the big, big screen. Boy, those eyes look like 50-cent pieces. They cannot believe it. And
so how?
Your heart,
so this is great, Herman. How long have you been doing that?
Oh my gosh, years and years.
Since you,
I've done it for a long time, Matt.
So you were doing this before you sold. You were doing this before you sold your business and restarted 4 days later.
Oh yeah, okay. I'm right back doing it again. And,
okay.
That's just, it really is. I mean, to see kids that their parents can't afford to go, but we make it where the daycare centers can come in there, and I mean, they come in there with the thousands.
That's great.
Matt, very quick.
Yeah.
Matt, I have one thing I wanted to say. We do have Sabrina here, who is basically going to, she's the MS group that we're supporting.
Right.
Do you have any questions for her that she could give?
No, I don't think so. I think the way this is going to be interesting how I write this, but I think the story needs to be mostly about Herman and Jason. And I think the thing that you could do, Sabrina, is and who? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Okay. No. That she was just thankful that you're not going to question her.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Okay. But what would be really helpful, like if Sabrina, if you have certain information, so that when I link, when I mention the Murdoch facility, or I mention Discovery MS, I'll put an active link so people could then go and read about it. So any information that you'd like to have featured, if you send that to me in the form of a link or links, then what I'll try to do is incorporate those into the piece that we do. And
absolutely, I'll pass.
That'd be great. In the same way, Herman or Justin, if there's any information about those dollar days or that program that you do for the kids, I think that's a great story to get out. So I'd like to incorporate that into it as well. But I think this is really great. You guys are everybody that's on the other end of this phone are really impressive. I'm really proud to be a part of a little tiny part of what you're trying to accomplish here. And that's what I hope I can put into the piece, is to get that out, because you're very, very impressive.
Thank you.
All right.
We appreciate that you're taking.
We appreciate your time and your effort, and we all pray that we will be very, very successful.
Me too, Herman. So here, the process is going to be: I'm going to try to put this into a single, beautiful draft, and then Jason and Herman, I'll email it to you. Justin, I'll copy you in also, just to make sure that what I've written fits your work, you know, fits you. So I haven't misinterpreted something. And if you just approve, if you either approve that or make any corrections where I've made a mistake, then what I'll do is I send it off to our editor. We have a beautiful young lady that works for us over in London, and she's going to clean up all the grammar and stuff like that. So you don't need to worry about making any of those corrections. Just make sure that your words are, my words about you are accurate. And I think, let me just look. I think we're targeting November for our publishing day, something November 18th, which would be great, because then we can have the
reading the 7th. I mean, the 7th.
So
that'd be ideal.
Yep.
So it looks like it's gonna work out just perfectly, and you've given me a lot of great material here. So now the work's on me to try to organize it into something that's fun to read.
Matt, are you going to be able to be here on November
7th? Yes, I'm going to, I think so. I haven't booked it in my calendar yet, but I definitely want to be there. So I'll say most likely yes.
My day is going to be a lot less happy if you're not here, buddy.
All right. I'm going to make a commitment to it. I'll get there.
Hey, when you do your article edit, you don't have to put in that we're not voting for Pat McCrory.
We love everybody.
We love everybody. Happy living too. We don't do anything. No, nothing political.
We love everybody. Just know that. We love everybody. When it's probably going to win the White House.
Hey, one last thing.
Equal obligation. Either side.
One last thing, we're working, it has nothing to do with this, but you made me think about it when we got into all the discussion about theater. At Happy Living, we're just embarking on a new way of communicating to people, which we're calling blog theater. I'm working with an old college football friend of mine who became a trained actor and adapter. Of novels, he writes adaptations into movies, and he's created and performed 2 one-man shows to high critical acclaim. He's really, really good. And so what he's doing is he's taking some of my posts and interpreting the message that he got out of it into a little miniature one-man performance. And we've just created a few of them. What I'd like to do is I'll just send the recording. It's about 6.5 minutes. I'll send it to all the emails that I have, and if you would just be a screening guinea pig for me and just listen to it and see and give any feedback, I'd really appreciate it.
You got it. I look forward to that.
Yeah.
All right.
That's really cool. Different.
I hope it'll be something people love. Anyways, you guys have been great. Thank you so much. You gave me a wonderful way to spend an hour here, and now a lot of hard work to do.
There you go.
Yeah, we thank you too.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Happy Friday, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Appreciate you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Yeah.